Welcome in. May I be of the first to say good afternoon to you on this Tuesday, June 2nd. Nice to have you aboard Focus with Paul W. Smith for Relentless Positive Radio with the team, the team, the team. Mike Parsons, our executive producer. Danielle Mason, who is the queen of the switches, and she is training Andres Hyde today. There's Andres. There he is. Good for you, Andres. And I'm saying that in case you can see them and the few people that are watching, because Facebook and YouTube pages now stream our video live. So if you're in a position, not driving, of course, but if you're in a position to sneak a peek, sneak a peek. Facebook and YouTube pages streaming video live right now. Of course, you can stream us for the audio, too. You can come back and podcast us, and I hope that you will. You do all of that by going to WJR.com or getting the free WJR app. Rich Luzinski keeping an eye on WJR traffic and weather. The Rich Meister doing a nice job. Boy, there's a lot of news that affects all of us. One of the biggest stories, and might be a biggest surprises, is that President Trump has tapped Michigan's own Bill Pulte. He's been the head of the Federal Housing Finance Agency. Now he'll be the acting director of national intelligence. That means, actually, that he'll hold on to both jobs, Federal Housing Finance Agency director, I guess, and now taking Tulsi Gabbard's job that she had to walk away from.
Wow, both sound like full-time jobs. He's going to be busy.
You would think so. But if he's saving us money, he's saving us money. So one job, one person for two jobs. Now, you might recall, you weren't around here then, but we used to have Bill Pulte on the show a lot. He was very much involved in the housing problems we had in Detroit. That is, trying to do away with the abandoned houses. Now, I don't know. He wanted to work with the mayor, but they ended up, from my memory, they did not actually work together. And I don't know any details behind any of that. But what I do know is we have a person who's very familiar with Detroit, very friendly to Detroit, whose family, Pulte Homes, very much a part of Michigan and, for that matter, the entire United States. So I meant to write him a note, and I didn't get a chance to do it before I came on the air. But congratulations to Bill Pulte. I hope that's good very specifically for Detroit and Michigan and obviously for these United States of America. Obviously, we want it to go well. That's a big job. Big job. I haven't read, is it online where the Trump, here's my headline, Trump reportedly tore into Netanyahu. Donald Trump lashed out at Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in an expletive-laden phone call. Oh, it's a phone call over Israel's continued strikes in Lebanon.
Yeah, and I think it was from witnesses. I don't think any audio is out there, but
witnesses that aren't supposed to be speaking are speaking. Obviously.
Right.
I mean, anyone who's there when the president's making a phone call is not supposed to then go to the media and talk about it. But here's my question. Is there anyone who's ever listened to this program or just lived life that hasn't understood that Benjamin Netanyahu will always do what he thinks is right for Israel? I don't care how friendly he is to us or anyone else. No one's going to keep him from doing what he thinks is best for Israel, which is kind of what you want in your leader, your president, your prime minister, your whatever. You want somebody who is completely devoted to the country. So that's what he's doing. And I don't know what he told President Trump about all of this or what President Trump thought, but Benjamin Netanyahu has not changed at all. This is the way he is.
Right. And that was my question. What did President Trump think that the agreement was getting involved with Israel attacking Iran? Did he think that if he got involved, he would call the shots? I mean, that we've seen that's not what's happening. In fact, it seems like every time the president or the United States announce some kind of progress or breakthrough, we hear about a huge attack, you know, within 24 hours.
Right. And I don't know. Look, I'm Lebanese. So, but I choose America. But I also say, well, what exactly is going on? And civilians are dying like crazy in Lebanon. And the Lebanese people don't welcome Hezbollah. On the other hand, Israel can't let Hezbollah keep bombing them from Lebanon. I mean, it's such a screwed up situation. It's sad and ridiculous. But I'm not surprised that Netanyahu is going to always do what's best for Israel.
Right. And
that's just the way it is.
And now the president, he's in a situation it seems like he's having a hard time getting out of.
Well, you know, there's the new Art of the Deal book.
No, I haven't heard about that.
It's the Art of the Deal book 2. The problem is it's written in Iranian, so I can't read it.
Right. Get a Google translator.
Anyway. I mean, they are handling our president right now.
Right.
And I don't know also, you pointed this out before the show in our very important pre-show meeting. What's going on? The president has never backed away from anything. And yet, two things in a row, having to take his name off the Kennedy Center. Okay, I'm taking my name off. And I'm letting the Congress handle the Kennedy Center. I'm not having anything to do with it. And then the lawfare fund, the $1.8 billion, that was taken away. And he didn't say, oh, yeah, well, we'll find the judge who knows what he's doing and get that. He walked away from that. Now, I have heard people say he should just renew his lawsuit to the IRS, which is for way more than $1.8 billion. And then he gets that money and he can disperse it any way he wants to.
Right.
Because it's his. But I don't know if that's what's going to happen or not.
Yeah, it's very surprising because, I mean, you know, what everyone's saying is that a lot of people are saying that Trump is backing down from the lawfare fund because it's very unpopular with fellow Republicans. But when has that ever stopped them in the past?
I don't know. Nothing. I mean, that's a good point. There are changes and things he's doing that he hasn't done before. We haven't talked about this, and I just want to say real quickly, those people in Bangkok who are still trying to rescue, I think there are two more people still missing in those caves. When I watch the news, which I have to, I watch all three national newscasts, and I see what those people are going through to try to save other lives of people they don't even know, I'm blown away because I have claustrophobia. I could never do what they're doing. Can you imagine diving into dirty water and not knowing when you're coming up or where you're coming up?
Right. I mean, they're just at risk as the people they're trying to rescue.
It's unbelievable. So I salute them. It's just hard to think about and hard to talk about. Very quickly, this isn't a long conversation, but I'm reading my business section of the Detroit News, the great Detroit News. I had forgotten. Did you remember that General Electric is owned by the Chinese now?
No, I thought General Electric owned everything here.
And now, I'm getting Danielle. This good thing about the camera on Danielle is she's waving her head yes. So, Danielle, you knew that it was a Chinese-owned company. Now, I totally forgot that.
I only know this because my mother worked for General Electric. Somewhere down here in Detroit, she worked for a branch. And, they're gone now, and they've been gone for about 15 years.
What? No, yeah. They haven't been Chinese for that long, I hope.
I don't know how long they've been Chinese, but she did end up losing her job because of downsizing and whatever they did.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah, so that's how I know.
Well, when I saw the headline, GE is bringing jobs back to the U.S., I said, what's that story? And then a Chinese-owned company draws praise for strategy and cost savings. Yikes! I don't know. Somewhere with all the other things going on in the world, I totally forgot that what used to be truly an iconic American brand company was owned by the Chinese. 1214 at WJR. The award-winning Ryan Ermani in JR Afternoon. Can you imagine this? I can't imagine it. Do you know how many people are running for governor that are on the ballot for governor in the great state of California?
It's something absurd.
61. 61 candidates.
So you win with 4% of the vote then?
I don't know. It's just crazy. And the whole race for mayor is fascinating. I mean, how could you reelect the mayor that failed the people so tremendously? But it's just, it's fascinating to watch. Congresswoman Debbie Dingell had a little history of her own recently. She broke her record of at least 30 years up on Mackinac Island for the Greater Detroit Regional Chamber Policy Conference. She had to work her other job as United States Congresswoman of Michigan's 6th District. And Debbie Dingell, I've said it before on the air, Congresswoman, that's where we first met many years ago, and you were missed.
I couldn't believe I wasn't there, to tell you the truth. I missed seeing people, the connecting, the talking about issues. And, you know, we were talking about another very important issue, the presidential nominating system and what states will go first and how you make sure that the issues that matter in November are the ones that candidates are talking about early. And I worked 5 straight days on that and Miss Mackinac, and I hope I don't miss Mackinac again for a long time.
Well, we hope not to. You are the great facilitator and conciliator. You bring people together because you want to work with both sides. Don't get me wrong. There's never a doubt you're a strong Democrat and all that. But you do try to work with other people. And you have worked with other people being Republicans and independents. But a couple of quick stories, one that affects Detroit and Michigan. Your quick thought, I mean, this is brand new news, but we have Bill Pulte, who used to be on our show a lot. Of course, his family is, he's the grandson of the founder of Pulte Group, one of the country's largest home builders. And he's been chosen to take, at least preliminarily, Tulsi Gabbard's place.
So I have to, look, I'm always honest on the show.
I know.
Quite frankly, was surprised. You know, the Pulteys are long-standing Michigan family. I even have in-laws in there somehow, with my brother-in-law married to my sister and her cousin. But, you know, I do think it's one of the most important jobs we have in this country, keeping us safe.
Acting Director of National Intelligence, right?
And that's what that job is. You kind of wish you had somebody in the job that had experience in national security, in diplomacy, and other skills. We'll see how he does. He has tried to be very political in some ways, going after another Michigander, by the way, on the Fed board. And, you know, we'll see. But I think that, quite frankly, in terms of our national security and keeping our country safe, that is one of the most important jobs we have.
And this is the way the president does this and can just appoint him. He's acting director of national intelligence. If formally nominated, Bill will have to be confirmed by the Senate to hold the position full time. And it might also be why the president is suggesting that Bill Pulte will continue as the head of the Federal Housing Finance Agency while he's acting director of national intelligence. But as you point out, Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, it's a pretty important position that needs to be a full-time position, I think, especially given what's going on in the world today. Here's a couple of quick questions, and you're very close to all these folks in Washington. And that is, we were talking earlier that we do not generally see President Trump backing down from a fight with a judge or anyone else, yet he seemingly very uncharacteristically has backed down from when they told him he can't have his name on the Kennedy Center and that he's not going to get that $1.8 billion lawfare fund. Have you noticed he just kind of said, oh, okay. I mean, in a sense, for him, that's kind of how he's saying it.
So I'm going to say several things. One, it is not in his nature to say, okay. And it is not really clear where we are on it's actually the 1.776, 19,
right.
or 1776. I mean, I think that as we get ready to do the reconciliation bill, as we come back this week, both Republicans, not Democrats, who do feel equally strongly, but Republicans in both the House and Senate want to ensure that that fund does not have a life. It is not going to come back in some way. It really is not. I mean, the fact that we would want to pay people that had been convicted, they've had their due process for assaulting a policeman and then giving them money is not okay.
No.
It is not ethical. It is not. You just can't defend it. So I want to see how that plays out this week, because I know the Republicans in both houses that won't believe that it's really not going to happen until we have ensured that it is not in legislation, not going to happen. And I think the Kennedy Center, much to the detriment of the Kennedy Center itself, is going to end up in the court. So I would, he said, let's turn it back over to Congress, but I haven't really seen this. And this is President Trump, and we'll see how both of these issues play out.
Very quickly, I know the music's playing, but you have been in Washington longer than most. And you know Dr. Jill Biden. You knew Joe Biden, and I think you were good friends. Her book is being released today. Would you have suggested to her to maybe not release that book? Look what she's going through right now, The View from the East Wing, a memoir. What's that?
The interviews she is doing are very difficult to watch. It's really difficult. It's just a very sad, difficult.
Didn't anyone around her tell her this is how it was going to go?
I don't know, Paul W. I just don't know. But it is difficult to watch. She's going to be in Ann Arbor in June, by the way. So.
No kidding. Yeah. Well, she's making the book tour. But I'm telling you, and I know your love for John, the late, the great Congressman John Dingell. And if you saw him on stage and you thought he was having a stroke, you would rush right up there and get him off that stage and get him medical attention immediately. She's looking very bad about that.
These interviews are very difficult to watch when you know people. And that's all I can say. It's very difficult to watch.
Okay. Everything else going all right with you? I didn't get to catch up with you because for the first time, as I say, you weren't up on Mackinac. We usually have off-the-record, wonderful personal conversations as your big brother.
Well, this country's tired. They're worn down. We have the 250th birthday, and I hope we can come together as Americans and celebrate our rich history and remember that there's far more that unites us than divides us. And that's what my next month is focused on.
From your lips to God's ears. Thank you, Congresswoman Debbie Dingell. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul W. Take care.
You do the same. 1230 WJR. Army veteran, businessman, good friend, Trump-endorsed candidate for U.S. Senate, Mike Rogers, officially the sole Republican candidate for Michigan's open U.S. Senate seat. And people say, how'd you become such good friends with Mike Rogers? I don't know how, but we've been friends for a long time, so much so that he actually is the man who gave the opening introduction speech for me in Chicago a number of years ago as I was inducted into the National Radio Hall of Fame. And Michael, I will be forever grateful for that and for you taking time out to be there to do that for me. How are things going?
Oh, things are going great. And by the way, that was a great highlight for me. It is, I hope your listeners understand what a big deal it was for you to be inducted into that Hall of Fame. And I was honored to play such a small little part in it and really enjoyed the opportunity to highlight what we have known for decades here in Michigan. What a treasure you are to the state and such an important voice for our state.
You're so kind. I missed you. I mean, it's easy because there were a lot of people and there were a lot of things going on, but I missed you up at Mackinac. I did happily run into your beautiful wife, Christy, though, and got a chance to say hello as I was running one way and she was running the other way. But how was
you got
Mackinac?
The better part. You got the better part of that deal all day long, and you know it.
I know it. I do know it. I didn't want to say it, but it's
well,
true.
What we heard is once you met Christy, you said, "Well, forget Rogers. We don't need to see him anymore."
I said, "Who is that Mike Rogers guy? Who is that Mike Rogers guy again? I can't remember." So how did it go up there for you?
You know what? Fantastic. The reception was really, really good. And one of the reasons, I think we were just so busy, people had requested us to have meetings with them, talk about our vision for the state, talk about real solutions, you know, and why that was different. If you happen to catch the debate from my opponents, I mean, it was all defund the police, raise your taxes, no solutions for our schools. I just don't think they're jiving with working families here in the state. And we got a chance to have those discussions about our housing plan, about how we're going to help fix education here, how we're going to expand opportunity for advanced manufacturing in the state, get us back in the defense industrial base, building that advanced, bringing that advanced manufacturing, expanding American energy to bring down rates, which will bring down food costs. So I thought it was highly productive, great reception, and we're excited. I mean, we have contingent of everyone from Detroiters all the way up to the UP, but Detroiters are really interested in having discussions on our housing plans and our education plans, and we were able to do that based on the meetings we had up at Mackinac Island. It was really good.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, you've been strong on this since I've known you. You realize, you've argued, Michigan needs a change in direction after decades of decline in manufacturing strength, income growth, educational outcomes. I had no idea just how bad it had gotten for us to be in the bottom 10 now in all of these areas. And we need to do something about it. And you want to do something about it. You've talked about it. Affordability, education. As you know, it seems your opponents are in their own little race to the left in a very messy, one of the messiest Democrat primaries in the country.
Yeah, it's just awful to watch, kind of awful to watch. How about that?
Yeah.
Listen, I mean, it's just the problem is it's just that doesn't offers no solutions. It takes the state way out of the lane of helping Michigan working families, and we just have to get back to that. The reason they think they can talk like that and do that is for 32 years we've sent two Democrats back to the United States Senate. And my argument is, listen, we're at least a 50-50 state. And if you continue to do the same thing over and over and wonder why we've lost 30,000 manufacturing jobs since 2018, we've lost defense industrial base capability. Our schools went from top tier to now, well, this year we're 45th. Last year we were 44th. So it's only getting worse. My argument is we continue to do the same thing over and over and expect a different result.
Hmm.
You know, guess what? I think that's the definition of insanity. This is Michigan's chance to get this right and to change. We're not going to get a whole nother term of 6 years or even another term of the governor in 4 years. I mean, think of all the costs that the Democrats have given us since 2018. When the name of the conference, Paul, you know, they talk about fixes, but it was WTF. Yeah, well, there's a WTF in how we got here. And then what's the fix? Never heard what's the fix. We're going to be a part of what's the fix for Michigan, but we're just not have a lot of time. That's why this election cycle is so important for the future of our state, so we're not sending our kids to other states in droves the way we're doing now.
Mike Rogers, sole Republican Senate candidate, veteran, former FBI agent, former chairman of the U.S. Intelligence Committee. What are your thoughts on the new acting director of national intelligence from our area, Bill Pulte?
Yeah, listen, the DNI is an interesting job, and it was, I think they're restructuring it. He is probably the right guy to restructure it, would be my guess. They have really solid hands, and the CIA director, who's really in the middle and the thick of all of the things you see happening around the world. So I feel pretty good about the fact the guy knows how to manage big operations and, by the way, understands change and understands the mission set. I think that is all going to be to the benefit of the United States. And when you think about all the challenges in the world, you want adults and you want real world experience sitting in those chairs.
Do you think President Trump is going to be able to handle I mean, there's no surprise here. I've said it a million times. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, no matter who his friends are or aren't, will always do what he feels is best for Israel. And unfortunately, right now, he feels it's best for Israel to be attacking Lebanon. And for our purposes in trying to work things out with Iran, that's a non-starter as long as they keep bombing Lebanon. So I think the president has his hands full, but he shouldn't be surprised, because no one has ever not believed that Benjamin Netanyahu would always do what he thinks is best for Israel, no matter what.
I agree with that, but I also think we have leverage there. I mean, we get the Iran problem solved, and I mean really solved. No path to a nuclear bomb, no path to a ICBM missile, which, by the way, they were working on. They have advanced missiles. We've seen their drones. You take that off the table. Think about what happens in the Middle East, Paul. You have, well, at least you would hope Iran would have the capability to engage in commerce around the world. That would change the fundamental structure there. No 40,000 troops there that we pay for. And guess what? I keep telling people who don't want to send things to Israel, get this Iran thing done, and guess what? You won't have to send defense material to Israel. They've told the world they can do it themselves if Iran isn't sitting on their border trying to kill them. And so I don't know. I think there's a lot of leverage for the president. The very fact that Rubio said that the Iranians are now talking on the nuclear waste issue, or excuse me, the nuclear enriched material issue, they weren't doing that 6 months ago. They weren't doing it a year ago. They didn't even do it 2 weeks ago. They just thought that they could wear America down because of midterm elections. We just can't let them get away with that. We've got to make sure they're not nuclear Iran. And if Trump can get a deal, I think he'll get a deal, and I think he'll push back on the Israelis to do exactly what we need to do to put America in the driver's seat in those negotiations.
Your website for people who want to learn more about what you'd like to do as our senator and maybe contribute money. What's the website?
I'm sorry. What was that part, Paul? I missed that part, the last part there.
The contribute money.
Rogers for Senate, Rogers for Senate.com. If you believe there's a better future for Michigan, I do. That's why Christy and I are doing this. This is our chance. Let's try something new. Send a Republican back that has the leverage to walk in the Oval Office and get something done for Michigan. Rogers for Senate.com.
All right. Best to you and Christy. Always a pleasure. Good luck to you, Mike.
Best to you and Kim. Thanks.
Thank you, as we continue on WJR. We got a major problem in this country regarding firearms, gun violence, and its impact on kids. It's become now, well, first of all, it's Gun Violence Awareness Month, an urgent crisis facing America's youth. More kids die from age 1 to 17 in the U.S. because of gun-firearm injuries. Leading cause of death. It's kind of crazy. There is a agree-to-agree campaign out there that's offering some help, and we turn to a trauma surgeon at Johns Hopkins University and a gun violence survivor himself, Dr. Joseph Sacharin. Doctor, welcome to the Paul W. Smith Focus Show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Paul.
What happened to you as a gun violence survivor?
Yeah, so, you know, I grew up in Northern Virginia. I considered a normal, you know, high school teenager. And at the age of 17, I went from being this, you know, healthy kid that played sports and thought about college to collateral damage after I was shot in the throat with a .38 caliber bullet. And, you know, when something like that, I think, happens to you at such an early age, it really kind of changes your entire trajectory and how you think about life. And in the years that followed, as I healed, I, you know, kind of was really inspired to not only go into medicine, but to become a trauma surgeon so I could give other people the same second chance that I was grateful enough to have. And
well, I'm glad I'm glad you turned that issue into this now to help other people. And before we run out of time, I want you to explain about how the Agree to Agree campaign continues to help Americans. It warns signs that families should look for. It gives practical actions for parents, caregivers, on how to protect their children and teens. Just go for it.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, Agree to Agree is a national nonpartisan initiative from the Ad Council that is focused on something that I think about every single day in the trauma bay, which is how do we stop children and teenagers from dying from gunshot wounds? As you pointed out, for four consecutive years, firearm injuries have been the leading cause of death for children and teens in this country. And what this campaign does differently is start from common ground. Gun owners and non-gun owners alike, parents, clinicians, business leaders, I think we all agree that no child should die from a gunshot wound. And the campaign gives people the tools and conversation guides to act on that shared belief right now during Gun Violence Awareness Month. And you can go to agreetoagree.org for obviously more information on that.
Agreetoagree.org. Excellent. And we're going to talk in there. You're going to find information that's very helpful to everyone. Secure firearm storage, how to deal with the moments of crisis and even suicide risk that our youth are following and falling into right now, and the very specific actions that parents or communities even can take to help protect children and teens. I believe in gun ownership, but I do believe there's a tremendous amount of responsibility that comes with gun ownership, and that includes secure firearm storage. Now, Doctor, I've gone a bit further, and people don't like this, but I think if you're everyone should be able to, under the right restrictions, own a gun. That's our right. But I kind of believe people should have to have training, just like we have to have training when we drive a car. I just think it would make more sense if we had safety training every time somebody bought a gun.
And I think, Paul, what you're pointing out is so critical because, look, this is about responsible gun ownership. As I'm sure you know, 80% of gun-owning households agree that safe storage reduces gun violence. And when you think about that, that's not a concession, that's a constituency. The most effective public health movements in history didn't win by making enemies of the people that they needed to reach. They built coalitions. And the way I look at gun owners are not as my adversaries, right? They're part of the solution. They're parents, neighbors, who want their kids safe just as much as anyone else. And so I'm meeting them there, and I think that's important as we think about these complex problems, to think about all the stakeholders that are required to really be able to move that needle forward and ensure that our communities are safer.
Well, I appreciate you taking time, Dr. Joseph Sacrin, who is a trauma surgeon there at Johns Hopkins University, and through your own experience, gun violence, its impact on children and teens. It really is an urgent health and safety crisis, and this is Gun Violence Awareness Month. I wanted him to be able to come on and give us his part of the story, and he is giving us a little ammunition, no pun intended, and that is by going online to agreetoagree.org, you'll learn more about ways that you can help, whether you're a gun owner or a non-gun owner. Agreetoagree.org. And I thank you very much, Dr. Joseph Sacrin. Nice meeting you.
Likewise, Paul. Thank you so much for having me.
Trauma surgeon, Johns Hopkins University, and a gun violence survivor. This month, June, which just began, is Gun Violence Awareness Month. We've got another hour to go with you here on WJR. All righty. Happy birthday to you if it's your birthday today. You celebrate it with one of our family members, Mike Pierce, one of our top account executives, son Zach. His son Zach is celebrating his birthday today. So happy birthday to Zach Pierce. And the Pierce mom and dad, very proud of their young boy. I know that Mike is very involved as a coach and all of that and all the different sports. And God bless him. Good family, man. We got some great people working at this radio station. That is for sure. Meanwhile, what have I done with all my paperwork here? I threw it around as I was running through the door.
It seems to be the question of the day around this time.
Yeah, I don't know what I did with it. I had it right here. My whole lineup of things I wanted to mention
Let me see if I can pull it up myself.
I remembered that, but I don't see it. Anyway, we've got the team, and we are appreciative of the team. Of course, Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason, who is the queen of the switches, and she is training Andres Hyde. Rich Luzinski, the Richmeister, taking a look at our WJR traffic and weather first, as we all gather together to give you as much relentless positive radio as we can. You can stream us, you can come back and podcast us, and I hope you will. In fact, you can listen to a two-hour show in about an hour and 10 minutes. It's amazing what they can do with the podcast at WJR.com. I hope you have the free WJR app. And to point out, too, that Facebook and YouTube pages have streaming video that's live now. I was up at Mackinac. I'm not going to point out whose podcast it was. But when I walked through what they now call Radio Row, that we're not a part of because we have a place of honor at the end of the, there in the parlor where we started. I started 30 plus years ago.
Who's counting?
I'm not counting. But I realized there were more podcasts than radio shows.
Yeah, they actually, I think there's a section there that they call Podcast Row.
Oh, over and above the Radio Row.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I saw a sign there.
I didn't notice that. I probably would have wiped it out of my mind anyway. But I have to say this. I'm looking at three guys behind a wall of incredible equipment. I mean, they had the best equipment. The computers, the this, the that, all the things I don't even understand what they are. And three guys, headphones on, monitoring this whole thing, and there are two people talking in front with cameras. And I said, I know I'm out of it, but A, how many podcasters there are, and B, how much money there must be in this to have you guys doing this. And it's astonishing to me. And I said, how many people are watching? And they looked down at whatever they had to look at, and they said eight.
Well,
eight people were watching to a podcast that cost more than a radio broadcast to put together.
Yeah, and, you know, I know that when it comes to podcasting, video is very important. I mean, a lot of people, that's how people discover podcasts and audio. It's the reason why we kind of started doing it, too. So, you know, maybe they're bigger on the replays or the social media clips than the actual live broadcast.
Don't know. Last night had a great dinner. I don't get a chance to do this with the fabulous Lomas Brown, who, along with Anthony Bellino, have the finest sports talk show host from 6 to 7 right here on WJR Monday through Friday. We went to Mr. Paul's Chop House, which is, you haven't been there, you've got to go. It's a fabulous, it's been there, it was written in the menu, I think 1968 they started.
Yeah, it's an East Side institution.
It is an institution. They've got great food. I insist that if you like Caesar salad, you will love their tableside Caesar salad. It's out of this world. And Mary, our wait staff person, has been there since the beginning. She said, well, I might have come 6 months after they started. So she's been there, you know, forever. And then Linda has been there for a very long time. It's when you go to a place, and I don't get there very often, it might have been a year ago, and you see all the same people still working there. It's a good sign. It's a good sign. They've got very good food, too. Very, very good. Speaking of food, you have frozen pizza or frozen pizza bread. If you got it at Costco, Target, or frankly, at any number of other stores, there's some kind of a recall for salmonella concerns.
Oof.
On frozen pizza bread or frozen pizza, I've seen it written two different ways, at Costco, Target, and other places. So if that's one of the things you buy virtually anywhere, you should check it out. Go online and find out if everything's okay.
Yeah, and I heard a specific brand, but I don't.
Well, you did? I didn't hear. I did not see a brand.
But let me double check because I don't want to give out the wrong.
All right. While you're looking, I'll say this. You remember. Maybe you guys don't, but you remember when you used to take people to the airport and you had all these wonderful goodbyes happening inside instead of now at the curb. I mean, you're basically saying goodbye to the curb because you're not getting past security to walk them down to their gate.
Right. It's also cut down on those dramatic, please don't go. I love you. You can't get on that plane.
That still happens out at the curb. But a growing number of airports are now reviving that nostalgic tradition by allowing visitors to pass through security and walk loved ones to their gate, even if they don't have a plane ticket.
You can do that at Detroit Metro.
You can.
You don't have to show them your ticket. You can just walk through. They don't care.
Yeah, they started.
I thought you had to show a ticket, but I thought I remembered hearing that they were going to do that at Metro, but I thought you still had to show a ticket.
Yeah, you haven't had to do that in years.
You don't have to rub it in, for God's sakes.
I'm just saying you could have been saying goodbye at the terminal.
Well, see, I know they opened
I send the kids off in a Metro car because I say I can't walk you down to the terminal.
Well, I know a couple years ago they started letting you in because they wanted people to be allowed to have access to the restaurants in the terminal.
Yeah, you can go to the Delta Sky Club.
I love the Delta. I love everything about Delta. Hey, so many quick things here. Taylor Swift announces a new song released for Toy Story 5.
Mm-hmm.
I love Taylor Swift. I love Toy Story.
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone heard the song? Is it already playing?
It comes out on June 5th.
Okay, good for you, knowing all of this stuff.
You'll hear it here on WJR.
That's right. We'll have a part of it right here as we debut.
And, Paul, that's the Motor City Pizza Company. That's the frozen pizza.
Motor City.
Brand.
It's not a Detroit story. It's a national story.
Well, I think it is distributed nationally because it says, you can get at Publix. We don't have Publix here. It says you can get it at Hy-Vee. We don't have Hy-Vee here. So I think it's a local company, but it's distributed nationwide.
All right. That's good to know. Thank you for finding that. Here's another one, another story. And I always wonder about this. If we could scrape money together, are we looking at the next Apple, the next IBM, the next NVIDIA? I mean, what are we looking at? We now hear there's a rush of AI-related IPOs, initial public offerings, captivating Wall Street. You've got Anthropic, OpenAI, SpaceX, all making moves toward going public. The AI boom is also driving gains in companies tied to the massive data centers needed to power the technology, fueling rallies beyond big tech, blah, blah, blah. So are we watching this happen? Is it the next General Motors? Is it the next, what is it?
Could it be a bubble?
Can we get an expert on that can commit to telling us about this?
Would that be an AI expert or a stock market expert?
No, it's got to be. I'd say it's a stock market or business expert.
Okay.
They're less likely to take
That says Sowerby to me, but I'll poke around.
Get David Sowerby and ask him about that. Yeah, let's do that. All right. 60 Minutes is in a tremendous amount of turmoil. Well, we don't have time to talk about it right now. Marie Osborne coming up. It's 1:14 at WJR. All right, let's check in now. Marie Osborne is here. I should double check here. I know exactly what she is talking about, but she goes to the trouble of writing a little intro, and I'm going to go to the trouble of reading that intro. It's been a little crazy behind the scenes here with a few things going on. Here we go. A few of the nation's tech giants were in Michigan yesterday to talk about a multi-billion dollar AI project that is transforming farmland in Saline Township and drawing both global attention and local backlash. WJR's Marie Osborne joins us with the details. Good afternoon, Marie.
Hi there, Paul. We're talking about OpenAI CEO Sam Altman. He was joined by Governor Whitmer and executives from Oracle and Related Digital. They toured the site in Saline Township of a $16 billion hyperscale data center campus. It's dubbed the Saline Barn. The project is expected to span more than 1.6 million square feet. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, highlighting the economic impact.
You know, we are breaking ground on the largest economic deal in Michigan history. The barn will be one of the most advanced AI infrastructure projects in the United States and bring tens of billions of dollars to the state of Michigan. It will create more than 2,500 construction jobs, more than 450 permanent good-paying jobs on site, and more than 1,500 good-paying jobs across Washtenaw County.
Altman said the project is a huge bet on AI, saying it could ultimately power breakthroughs in medicine and education and small business.
I think it's fitting that this is happening in Michigan, given all of the history of doing hard things, building complex things that serve the country and the world. And that really gets to the second point, which is it's easy to throw around these numbers. 1 gigawatt, hard to conceptualize that. You know, this many tens of billions of dollars sounds like a big number. Hard to conceptualize that, too. This could very well turn into the site where cancer gets cured.
Now, the plan also includes a $10 million donation to expand the Saline Recreation Center. But as you've pointed out, Paul, this development remains controversial. Residents raising concerns about energy use, traffic, environmental impact, transparency. There have been lawsuits, protests, even threats against local leaders. Backers say the project will bring tax revenue and global innovation. Critics say these benefits may not outweigh the local impact. Construction is underway.
Wow, I don't know what to say. It's not my backyard. So, you know, these are people who have this in their backyard and they're worried about it. All I know is the great Jim Fitterling of Dow in Midland has been on my show before talking about that he was very much involved with, and I'm not going to explain it well enough. Maybe I'll ask him when we're in Midland for the Dow Classic this next week, that they are coming up with these small self-contained nuclear energy power plants that a place like this, for example, could create all of the energy they need right on site. That would take care of one of the quick questions and problems that people have about energy use. I don't know about water usage or any of the other things, but it's been a long time, if ever, that somebody has offered a $16 billion, in this case, data center campus to be constructed somewhere and have people say, gee, who needs $16 billion in jobs and in revenue and in new taxes and all of that? I mean, that's a lot of money. If we can figure out a way to do it and become the darling of data centers in the country, it could change the face of Michigan, which, as we learned up at Mackinac, kind of needs to be changed.
It is the question of the hour, that's for sure. I think people, first and foremost, are very concerned that their energy bills are going to be going up because they just have a hard time believing that this is not going to impact their bottom line in their family budgets. So there's that concern. I think what I keep hearing from people who are protesting this is that they don't feel that there's enough open conversation, transparency. We had the one place where they voted on a proposal and then had public comment. I mean, how ridiculous is that? You know, you should have public comment. People should be heard, ideas considered. So I think people feel a little pushed around in all of this.
How did they, you know, I live in a cave, so I might have missed it, but you said it's already under construction. How did it get approved in the first place?
Oh, well, this has gone through the channels that they have to have for zoning ordinances. They just had a picture. I just happened to look up at the screen and they had a picture, an aerial view of, you know, what's already happening in that area and the amount of space that it's taking up. So it's 1.6 million square feet. The quote, a Saline barn is going to be that size.
One heck of a barn.
I mean, I can't even conceptualize 1.6 million square feet.
Uh-uh.
But all of us use data every single day. We use AI. We use everything every day. So if we want to keep using that, there, you know, you have to consider what's on the other side of that.
Right. Everything comes with a cost, and what we have to figure out is if the cost is worth it.
Yeah.
I hope it is.
Yeah.
I do hope it is. And I hate for us to keep losing farmland, but that's happening anyway. At least this is not, as far as I know, the Chinese buying our farmland.
Oh, yes.
Thanks, Riri.
Thank you.
Marie Osborne, WJR's Director of Community Affairs and News. With our Relentless Positive Radio, some incredibly good, hopeful news regarding fighting cancer. This is big, and it's up next here with Paul W. Smith, WJR. You know, there's a lot of talk out there about these data centers. In fact, somebody said, you know, they get ahead of themselves. They say, well, this data center, this could be the location for the cure for cancer. I don't know if that's true or not true, but I do know this. There is some very real information out there that we trust the next person to tell us about. He is a world-renowned oncologist with Henry Ford Health. He is the co-leader of the Pancreatic Cancer Center. He is Dr. Philip Philip, and we are hearing great news about a new drug that nearly doubles survival rates in one of the worst cancers you could possibly get, pancreatic cancer. Dr. Philip, what a pleasure it is. My name's Paul W. Smith. Welcome to Focus, and tell us all about it, sir.
Thank you, Paul. This is certainly a breakthrough. I've been doing this for the last 3-4 decades, and this is the first time, the really first time, that a single drug did what it did in this disease. It doubled the survival. It made patients not only live longer, but also it helped patients to live with less pain. So all around, it's a winner. And this is going to be something which gradually replaced the regular chemotherapy we give, which really is not as targeted treatment. And this is a typical targeted treatment where everyone wants to have. We talk about just trying to kill the cancer cells by hitting the nerve center, which is really causing the cancer cell to proliferate and spread within the body. So certainly a major advance in our treatment, and it will open the door to curing the cancer.
Well, this is such good news, and it all came out during an oncology conference. What I'd heard, and I'd forgotten about cancer, it's when cells start to reproduce and run amok, basically, and that's partly, I mean, I'm simplifying it, but in metastatic pancreatic cancer, it's been the worst to fight. I mean, it's been a death sentence. We lost L. Brooks Patterson, Oakland County executive. We've lost a lot of people. When you hear that somebody's got pancreatic cancer, generally you feel like, well, that's it. That's a death sentence. So this new drug is at least extending the lives of people. But to me, Dr. Philip, world-renowned oncologist at Henry Ford Health, it sounds to me like a drug that stops the run-amok replication of cells could work on a number of cancers.
Correct. It can work on other cancers, but the cancer should have the same, what we call the molecular makeup or the molecular signature. These are the tests we do on the cancer cells to see if they have certain mutations. And in this case, it's the KRAS mutation, K-R-A-S mutation. So the cancers that have that include, for example, lung cancer, some of the lung cancers, some of the colon cancers, and some other cancers also can also have it. So it's really very good news for pancreatic cancer, but also it is good news for the other cancers because the other studies are still in progress and we don't know the results yet. But the guess is that it will also be effective. It will also open the way for us to combine this drug with some other drugs that are targeted agents, which will mean that we will double or triple what we're getting with single agents. So it is really a very good prospect for researchers to really work on some cocktails around this treatment, which will make life even much better for us.
When this research was shown at the oncology conference, doctors were moved to stand and cheer. And I don't think you see that very often at these kinds of conferences.
I've been attending conferences. This was the ASCO conference, which brings all the oncologists from the whole world. It's not only U.S. And I've been attending this for the last 3-4 decades. And this is maybe a handful of times that it's happened that there is a presentation that people not only stand up and there's a standing ovation, but people, some of them were crying, especially for pancreatic cancer. Think about it. This is a disease, as you described it initially, it's a very bad disease. Having something moving the needle now for better survival, it's difficult to even explain or describe. For especially someone like myself who deals with it every day, I see the patients and their families. It's something amazing to happen.
Now, this has been big news, obviously. So you see patients every day. I imagine every one of them would like to at least try this drug. By the way, how do you pronounce drug?
How do I spell it?
And no, how do you pronounce it? Derex.
I don't know. Say it again. Daraxonrasib.
Daraxonrasib.
Rasib, yeah.
Who makes it?
A company called Revolution Medicine, American company.
Wow. And now, am I right? Are people coming out of the woodwork and saying, Dr. Philip, can you get me that Daraxonrasib?
So when the press release was done 6-8 weeks ago about the result, not the full results, just the press release. The company is obliged to do that. Soon after that, there was a directive that the company should be providing it in a program called the Expanded Access Program. The patient applies. I mean, we apply for the patient. Certain requirements for that, and the company will provide the drug free. This is up to the point that it will be FDA approved. Once it's FDA approved, the insurances will be covering it and the Medicare, et cetera. So for the time being, that can be obtained through the expanded access program. The other thing I want to really highlight is that there are other clinical trials being done in different, what we call, stages of the pancreatic cancer. Some of the trials will be opening at Henry Ford ourselves, and I'm sure other places around Michigan and other states. So these trials will be another opportunity for patients to get it in situations that may not be clearly FDA indicated in terms of the timing of the treatment. So if you get it through expanded access until FDA approval, when FDA approves it, the drug will be available for prescription. Throughout all this period, there are clinical trials for patients to be on it so that they can have access. The medical community, the cancer community, is very keen to, as much as possible, to get these drugs available for patients.
God bless you, doctor, and work that you do. This is such good news. We appreciate you telling us all about it. Thank you very much. World-renowned oncologist Henry Ford Health and the co-leader of the Pancreatic Cancer Center at Henry Ford Health. Imagine this. Nearly doubling the survival rates in some pancreatic cancer patients, there have been treatment has eluded medicine from the beginning on pancreatic cancer. This is a very big story that I hope and pray is only going to become even bigger and find a way to do away with all cancers, which I certainly hoped and prayed we would have done by now. But it's elusive. It's tough. And people are trying, and this just proves it. It also proves, by the way, we have some of the best doctors in the world right here, in this case, at Henry Ford Health. You don't have to go anywhere else. And when they get that new building, you'll really understand you don't need to go anywhere else. 144-760 WJR. You love that Tim McGraw? Well, we've got WJR's Tim McGraw VIP Experience, your chance to rock when country music legend Tim McGraw brings his Pawn Show Guitar Tour to Pine Knob Music Theater August 28th. You could win a pair of premium pavilion tickets, transportation courtesy of the great Metro Cars, and $100 to some delicious Buddy's Pizza. To enter, just download the free WJR mobile app. Find the secret keyword, then text it to 800-859-0957. That's right. It's easy to enter. Just download the free WJR mobile app, find the secret keyword, then text it to 800-859-0957. You need more information, you'll find it at WJR.com, WJR.com. Okay, I'm looking forward to celebrating with Mark Sneffkamp and the Sneffkamp family of dealers. We just heard Mark on the air talking about his four generations of Sneffkamps doing what they do for 100 years. So we're excited, and we're going to celebrate with him on that. So I know, I know, Mike, that I am a baby boomer. I do not know what age we're talking about for Gen Z and Gen X.
Let's see.
And maybe Danielle knows, or
Gen Z ages. So Gen Z was born between 1997 and 2012. Gen X was, hold on, Gen X, 1965 to 1980.
1965 to what?
1980.
1980. So the order is baby boomer, Gen X, and Gen Z.
Well, millennials between Gen X and Gen Z.
Where's millennials?
Millennials is 1980 to 1996.
Who can keep track? I can't keep track of all this. All right, so here's what I'm getting at. There's a story here. It says younger Americans, particularly Generation Z, show optimism about the future, but are less attached to America as a concept compared to older generations.
Huh, interesting.
Despite the optimism among young people, there is a sense of detachment from the United States as an institution, with 41% of those under 30 saying they would rather live in another country. Most of them haven't visited other countries and wanted to kiss the ground of America once they got back, but that's another story. The poll found that younger generations are more positive about the future, with 63% of Gen Z believing in a better standard of living over the next 50 years compared to 37% of Gen X. What do you think? I think there's going to be a better standard of living over the next 50 years. What do you think?
I mean, I believed in a better standard of living over the last 50 years when I was in my 20s, and it remains to be seen. I mean, I know that millennials are... statistically, there's more instances of them not making as much as their parents did when it comes to the years and inflation. So
harder to buy a house.
Right.
Older now to buy a house.
Yeah.
Know that.
But I mean, if things are cyclical, then it would make sense that, you know, the standard of living would bounce back sometime in the next 50 years. What do you think, Danielle?
Honest to God, I have no idea. I have no hope.
You're not worried.
I'm worried. I'm just going to be in debt forever. So what's the point of worrying about it?
Yeah. Okay. I feel like millennials are going to be the first generation to pay their student loan bills with their Social Security checks.
Oh, jeez.
That's going to be true for me.
Older generations, particularly baby boomers, showed more pessimism about the future, despite being generally more enthusiastic about America. And America 250 itself. The majority of respondents across all age groups expressed pride in being an American, with slightly higher levels among baby boomers, and most preferred to celebrate America 250 by reflecting on history and values rather than just celebrating achievements. Does that make sense?
So celebrating history and values more so than achievements. Yeah, so... Yeah, that does make sense. Like like American ideals instead of, like, you know, back in 1776, we did this and that.
Well, you know, call me a boomer, but I am. I do want to believe that these data centers and AI, learning from the mistakes we've made, even with social media and how we let that run amok and get out of control and do a lot of harm, I'm hoping that's not the case with the data centers and the Celine Barn and all the other data centers around the country and that are still to come. But I don't know.
Right. It's like we know we're going to need them eventually, but what kind of safeguards need to be put in place before?
Yeah. JR Afternoon, after we stand by for news with the award-winning Ryan. Ready and raring to go, Ryan.
And my loins are girded. I Woo! Am ready to go. And Woo! This data center situation, Paul, is among the biggest stories, not only locally, but in the country. So many people just don't understand right. them at all. And I think that's part of the problem.
Well, the funniest thing, and this is not unusual, even those of us who don't understand still have a strong opinion.
Absolutely.
Stand by for news and Ryan Ermani. Go on out, make it a great one. Regards, Paul W. Smith.